Welcome to the Angry Admins podcast for March 26, 2007, episode 21. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Angry Admins podcast. We are coming to you from Houston, Texas. And once again, my name is Joe Bibby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
We're back to the standard two-crew show this week after our wonderful guest host last week, which I thought went really well. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. On the show, we do talk about information technology, gadgets in the workplace and at home, and really just where we think information technology is going to go in the future. Why don't we get it started with some news this week? Ryan, you had an interesting story about a printer, I think, right?
Yes, there's a new printer, actually a printer technology, a company called Silverbrook Research unveiled some videos of their test printers, and these things are doing 60 pages per minute.
Wow.
So if you, we'll have a link in the show notes, but there's a video kind of on their website, and it shows like a label printer, which is just shooting out labels like crazy, you know, just as fast as it can. And then it shows like a photo printer, like a desktop photo printer, like kind of like an inkjet, what you would normally have. And it's just thrown out 8x10 glossies, like bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
And it's just beautiful. And then supposedly all these are like 1600 DPI.
Wow.
Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's pretty
high. Especially
high.
At that speed. How much ink is it using? Who knows? I don't know. But and they even have a video, at the end of the video is this big black plotter, like I guess e-size, you know, wall size plot.
Right, yeah, the big...
And it's printing out like a full, you know, 4 foot wide, glossy, you know, super high res poster. And it just looks gorgeous. And it's just streaming off the thing. It like you said, it looks like someone just loaded up a roll of already printed stuff and the thing's just form feeding it, but that's not what it's doing.
Yeah, it's so bizarre when you showed me this video. I mean, this is one of those times where I wish we had a video podcast just because you can't describe how this looks. you have to go there now. We'll wait. While you watch the video. Okay, thanks for looking at it. Now, it's just, it. I mean, it just looks like it's just coming out. Like they just, and it must not be sliding back and forth because you don't see, I mean, that thing would just, like you were saying, it would just shake itself apart if it was going that fast and it was going back and forth like a standard HP inkjet. I don't know, I'm curious. I'm sure that they're keeping pretty tight what the technology actually is. It seemed like there really wasn't much information about it.
Yeah, they're calling it MemJet. Supposedly, it's going to be on the shelf at the end of the year.
Wow.
So, at the end of the calendar year for 07. But I think it's time for like a new technology because the whole little ink thing, what I don't know is whether it will be cheaper or more expensive. I think they plan for this to compete in the $150 range, at least for the desktop printer.
Right.
But we definitely hope that it leads us to some cheaper printers because the whole model we have right now where you buy a $50 printer with $70 ink cartridges. It's just not optimal. So.
Yeah, I mean, that technology in computer terms is actually pretty ancient. You know, that was developed way back, you know, when, I don't remember what year it was, but I want to say in the early 90s, and I mean, that's a long time ago. And basically all they've done is, you know, shrink the dot size of the ink that's sprayed onto it and speed up the motor. So it's really not anything amazing that's happened recently. So it's about time for something like this to come along. I remember back, I want to say in the late 90s, there was that like thermal color printing technology that looked amazing.
But thermal wax,
But it was like a page an hour. So
well, it was bizarre too because you could pick up the sheet and like look at it on its edge and you could see the stuff sticking
out. Yeah, so. It was really weird. So, I mean, that looked amazing. That was before inkjets really could print anything of high quality. And, you know, they kind of caught up with it and passed them. You know, but this not only looks like it's amazing quality, but it's fast. I mean, it's just, this blew me away.
So they're trying to compete with the color lasers. If they can come in at a cheaper price point than the color lasers, then they win.
Which wouldn't be hard to do.
No, that's true. What else do we have? Something about React OS?
Yeah, so this new OS was kind of officially announced, I guess it was just right around a week ago, right after we recorded our last show. And what this is really something I think that's kind of interesting, and I'm curious to see if they're going to get sued out of existence. But according to the guy who wrote it, which is helped write a lot of it, Alex Lonescu. Sorry if I butchered that, but anyway, apparently it's 100% binary and API compatible with the Windows 2003 kernel. So this is basically a open source GPL licensed version of Windows that can run most apps.
Windows apps?
Windows apps. So I dove into the, there's a PDF that we can link to that kind of goes into detail about it, and I dove into a little bit, and it looks like they wrote an NT kernel from scratch to kind of duplicate exactly what Windows is doing and throwing out all the garbage, like the horrible memory management and just some of the things that Windows has kind of had to inherit from their past, and they've thrown all that out. So my guess would be that old software probably doesn't work, but anything that's kind of written for NT and beyond, so stuff that worked on 2000 should work, or XP. And
I wonder if this is going to be more or less secure than a normal Windows operating system.
That was one of the other things they addressed, is that they tried to a lot of the security holes, you know, are because of backwards compatibility. So they've tried to eliminate as many of those as possible, and especially on the kernel level. The other thing that's interesting to note about this is that it's not really targeted for a home user. Their big goal for this is to target the academic market.
Interesting.
And they want people to be able to use this to develop on. And I don't really, I didn't really get it. You know, I really tried to understand what their point was. I guess just because it's cheap, you know, because it's open source, you can get it for free, versus buying Windows, I guess would be their plan, and to get people to be able to develop for free. You know, that's a noble cause, but it's apparently not really ready for prime time yet. It's getting there. And so, interesting thought. Not sure if anything's really going to come of this. I haven't actually installed it, but from what I've read, you know, it blue screens just like 95 used to. So I don't know if this is really a step forward.
I wonder if it would run the latest Windows interface hacks, like to make your interface look like Vista.
Yeah, you know, it might. I mean, it looked a lot like Windows 2000. I didn't see any of the XP stylings in it, but I'm sure it could easily be added. To me, this just seems like the wrong way to go. I mean, they tried to twist it in that, okay, you can develop for this, and then you can test it on this and Linux and make your code dynamic so it can run on anything. But why not just make it run on, like, Linux from the first place and just target that? And to me, to try to make something that can run Windows, people are just going to want to buy Windows. You don't buy Windows because you want something that's open source. You buy it because you want something that just works.
Right. And I guess if I had an academic lab at a college and say we're studying particle physics and I want 50 workstations that all like network together and crunch numbers.
Right.
I think I'm just going to do that in Linux.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why the Windows thing.
Yeah. And if you don't want to mess with Linux, you're just going to pay for Windows because, you know, XP, which is with as much as everybody makes fun of it, it's pretty solid. And this is not solid at all. So I don't know. I don't really see the point of it. It's an interesting thing that could have some future if they can iron out some of the bugs. And but they're using Wine as a big part of it, and I don't have high hopes for this.
I do give them credit as an alternative to, you know, well, what do you want? Windows, Mac, or Linux? Well,
yeah.
if there was a fourth player out there that was a free thing,
right?
I mean, that could be good.
Yeah, I'll cheer from the sidelines.
Okay. Joe's like, yeah, Ryan, you go ahead and try that out. Let me know how that goes.
So what else did you see this week, Ryan?
So today, I believe, March 26th, according to, I think, Wired.com, today is the anniversary of the 1999 Melissa virus, a name that will bring back probably unfond memories.
Cue scary sound effect.
Yeah, for those of us in the IT world. So this was the first successful mass mailing worm, and it spread like wildfire through the people that had the Windows-based email systems, and so it went everywhere, and it was all over the news, and companies were turning off their not just their email, but their whole network connection to the outside world, and there was a lot of panic and discussion about it, but this is the anniversary for that, and it doesn't seem like it doesn't seem like email worms are such a big deal now.
Yeah, I think it seems like Microsoft has locked down, you know, most people don't use the preview pane, or they turn off, you know, images are turned off, and, you know, people are smart enough not to double-click attachments from people they don't know, or, you know, things that are unexpected. It's like, I think everything's just gotten just enough better that worms have been kind of blocked.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing, too, I think that people, malicious code writers, I think, are throwing their energies into botnets and things like that now versus the whole spread by email. And I do still get what I believe are worm-based emails sometimes in inboxes at work. And they seem to be periodic, like someone boots up an old machine and I start getting spam for like a couple of days just because my email address was on a web page that they bookmarked a long time ago, and now this worm is shooting out emails to that address. But I don't know that people are getting smarter or better about not clicking attachments, but maybe there's enough patching that has finally trickled into the collective system to kind of slow this stuff down, or maybe ISPs or the major internet service providers are scanning for this stuff to try to slow it down. But it just doesn't seem to be as big of a problem anymore.
Yeah. And you know, it could be, too, like you were saying about the spam, it could just be a matter of virus writers don't care if you know that there's a virus. In fact, they don't want you to know. Whereas before, it was kind of like, here, install this, and now let me show you what I'm deleting off your system while I'm doing it. Right. Ha ha, look at you, you're a moron. Now it's like, I want to make some money. Let me install this and make a penny per email, and I'll be a millionaire by the end of the year.
Right. And it's better if people don't know I'm there.
Right. So there could still be some worms going around that maybe we just don't know about, but I'd like to think that it's subdued a little bit.
Mm.
I heard there was some big news about Intel and something with China this week.
Yeah, so in Beijing, Intel announced that it's going to build a $2.5 billion chip factory in China. This is, I guess it makes sense based on the growth rate in China right now.
Sure.
I mean, if I was a venture capitalist and I had, you know, $1 billion to throw around, probably China is where I would put it.
Yeah.
And I think that overall their economy, especially like the middle class, is just exploding.
Yeah, it is.
So there are more. I mean, one of the reasons why United States gas price is so high is because oil is in such demand, and it's not from the U.S. It's from the additional demand from countries like China, where they've just undergone just a gigantic boom. Economically, and suddenly all these people that, you know, 20 years ago had bicycles, now they're buying Hondas. You know, it's just kind of crazy. So China is really exploding. In a way, this is maybe a good thing for the United States and for the free world, because, you know, the more, I guess, Western-based companies that sort of wedge themselves into China and bring money and bring technology, I think over the years that will probably help erode some of the old ideologies there and kind of tilt them maybe back towards some Western capitalist you know, ideas.
And I didn't really look in detail at this story, but I glanced it over and I saw that it seems like they're really actually targeting, it's not just let's build this plan and then ship it all back to the U.S. It's like they're targeting the upcoming computer market in China.
Right.
You know, from what I saw, they're using older technology. Looked like I saw 90 nanometer, which is kind of a couple generations old. So it's like they're thinking ahead, you know, China's kind of in the industrial revolution right now, I guess I would say, and they're going through it really, really fast. So they're about to come in, and they're going to need, everybody's going to want a personal computer, and I think it's getting to that point. So this is, you know, Intel playing it smart and getting in ahead of AMD or somebody else.
Yeah, and I mentioned economically, but, you know, China's blooming in multiple ways, you know, also academically.
Right.
So there's a lot of research and a lot of, like, a lot of their college systems are being reformed, actually coming to the United States, I've heard recently, and visiting different high-profile colleges to learn how, like, the college system works and how they can sort of reform their own educational systems to foster innovation, technology, things like that. So, you know, in the next 10 years, we might see China becoming a world leader in, you know, not just, you know, creating low-end goods that get shipped out, but, you know, also creating and innovating things there inside China that stay there and that maybe the U.S. buys, you know, that, you know, we start looking to them in some cases for technology to bring back here. Today I read an anecdote, and I apologize up front for not having the link. Maybe someone else can help us with that, and we can put it in the forums. But basically, it was a story about a guy and I believe his girlfriend. His girlfriend was supposed to review a movie for her job, so they went to the theater to see this early screener version of the movie. Well, the line was taking forever, and it was because every person entering the theater was being practically strip searched to make sure they didn't have any cameras on. Then everyone's cell phones got taken away, and you had to get a ticket to get it back. And then once you got into the theater, there were four guys down front with, like, night vision video cameras taping everyone in the theater throughout the entire movie to make sure that no one in there was taping their top secret movie that was being shown.
And they paid to go,
and they paid to be there. Okay. So, you know, this is just, I don't know, it's crazy with the way theaters, I mean, the theater experience is already becoming unpleasant enough with people talking and sticky seats and expensive, you know, drinks and popcorn and kids talking on cell phones and, you know, it's just a huge teen hangout, you know, now of kids running all loose around. And if you don't want to go to the big theater, then you have to go to the video rental store, which is almost as horrific.
Yeah. I mean, and they're not going to have what you want.
The cool new movies, you know, they're going to be all rented out. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be stuck renting Spy Kids 2 from the the smarmy girl at the front with an earring in her nose, you know, who doesn't want to be there. And all throughout the store, soccer moms tripping on their kids and, you know, drunk guys looking for some 1980s movie that no one's ever heard of, Conan or whatever. So in the light of this, you think, okay, media in the United States is such a huge thing. How can we get new videos that we want to see?
Right.
And there's a lot of ways to do that. But there, a lot of these ways are competing, and a lot of them aren't perfected yet. So, Joe, what do you think about some of the new
stuff?
Well,
you know, it's a big problem. I mean, we've got all this technology surrounding us. We have computers that can, you know, search for aliens and solve the problems with cancer and, you know, determine the entire human genome, yet we can't get a good video download service.
Right.
I mean, how hard can it really be? So, you know, there's several of them out there, and, you know, they're all trying to get their own angle, and it's like you have, so, you know, in the past it's been simple. When you want to watch TV, you have one source, you have your antenna. Then we had cable and satellite come in, but they're really not that much different, and there's really only a small bit of competition. You know, there's probably only one cable provider, and there's only a couple satellite providers, so, and they all have the same channels.
Right, for any given area.
Yeah, for any given area. So, you know, you're not, you don't really have a lot to think about when it comes to standard TV watching. When it comes to watching movies, you know, it used to be you walk to the rental store, and you chose Blockbuster or Hollywood Video or the local place who was trying to compete with those guys, you know, Movie Time or whatever else there was. Blockbuster squashed all those, of course, because they charged lots of late fees and made lots of profits. So then came Netflix, right? And everybody knows about Netflix. I think it's interesting that they kind of approached this in a time when everybody was thinking about movie downloads, you know, way back when, and realized that, you know, the best way is just a tractor trailer.
Right.
I mean, we've talked about this off the show, but I think we both are in agreement that that's just a smart way to go about it. I mean, it's a lot cheaper to ship it with postage than it is to try to send it over the pipes.
Pay for the bandwidth.
Yeah, to send it over the tubes. So, okay, so what do we have available right now? Some of the different options. We both have Xbox 360s, right? And I've tried the online rental, and it works pretty well for standard def, very similar to the experience you have in iTunes, where you pay for it, it starts to download, and you wait.
Right.
And you wait some more. So it's not instant gratification. It works pretty well, but standard def is really about all you're going to want to get. You know, and you compare that to like a video experience where you're going to the video store. It's probably about the same amount of time, but you're actually doing something.
Right.
So, you know, you're interacting, and it's kind of a fun, used to be a fun experience until, well, we already discussed that.
Unless you get that video home from the store and it's either the wrong video or it's scratched
right.
and it won't play.
Yeah.
So there's that.
So when you download it, you know, it's going to work every time, right? No.
Man.
I mean, you've got BitTorrent coming in, and the DRM for their purchases doesn't seem to ever work, and you know, I just don't feel like we're there yet. You know, when it comes to especially high def. So I tried to rent a high def movie this past week, and it was just appalling. I have a pretty decent pipe coming into my apartment. You know, it's not the fastest available, but it's definitely better than most.
Mm-hmm.
And it took all night before it was even ready to be watched. It wasn't even at 100%. And it was so dissatisfying that I didn't even want to watch it anymore. So I've still got this movie waiting for me that I've paid to rent, and I just haven't watched it yet. It's high def, Dolby surround sound, should be amazing. But I was so turned off by the whole experience that I'm not even excited to watch it anymore.
Right. So this was through the...
So this was through Xbox Live.
Okay.
Which, we talked about it when that story broke. I remember we were talking about it. We were both pretty excited about it. And the big difference was it was the first to offer high def. They beat everybody to the market. Mm-hmm. Well, now we see why nobody else is doing it. Because it just doesn't work. It's too slow.
Yeah. That's too much data.
Yeah. And, I mean, we could go through each of these services. You know, there's the Apple TV. There's BitTorrent, there's TiVo and the Amazon Unbox service, which we've mentioned. You know, you've got YouTube trying to find their way through it. Netflix and Blockbuster are competing with each other. You know, they're both trying to offer downloads, and you know, Blockbuster's rumored to be purchasing Movie Link, and everybody's trying to find their way, and nobody's got the answer. None of them are really standing apart from anybody else.
Right. And I think part of it is they're not sure where the final destination is.
Right.
They don't know whether these videos, YouTube is fine because it's free. It is the beef jerky of online video because it's the contents are kind of crappy and you're not expecting anything, but you're still satisfied when you consume it.
Right.
But you're watching it on your computer monitor.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wouldn't want to watch YouTube on my television. Number one, because the content is not worthy of my TV. Yeah.
And number two, I don't want to see your cat take a dump in high def.
Right. But I think these companies just can't, they're not sure whether they're trying to push videos that will be watched from your couch or from
right.
your computer chair. And if they knew the answer to that, they would kind of have a better idea of where to invest.
Right.
But they're not sure where all this is winding up.
And a good example of that is the Amazon service, which, you know, previously has only been available on your computer, and now they've
right.
teamed up with TiVo and you can download it to your TiVo. Well, but that doesn't really work very well. I mean, it seems to work okay because you can order it from home and you remove that delay a little bit because
mm-hmm.
you can order it online while you're at work
right.
and then it's ready when you get home.
Mm-hmm.
But they have limited availability and it doesn't, you can't play it until it's completely downloaded, and
right.
there's just some flaws there.
Right. And I think the high def should really never be downloaded. I think it's a poor waste of everyone's bandwidth. I think it's too expensive for companies. I think it takes too long. Like in your experience, it's
mm-hmm.
just going to frustrate the
mm-hmm.
customer. And, you know, we're in an on-demand culture, and that waiting 6 hours for something to come down, I mean, I might wait 6 hours for a BitTorrent.
Right.
But if I do that, it's probably something that I start when I go to bed. You know,
somebody, well, and you're willing to wait because you're not paying for it.
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's the big difference here. Even if I'm only paying $1.99 for a TV rental, well, I guess you can't rent it, purchase.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be perfect because I'm paying for that.
Right.
But I'm willing to go through pain and suffering
mm-hmm.
to get a BitTorrent to work.
Right. If you had an HD DVD player, say, and you go to the store and you buy a high def DVD,
right.
you walk out and it's in your hand.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel like, all right, well, this is it. I got it. It's brand new. I'm going to take it out of the package, and I'm going to go home and watch it. You know, you didn't have to wait extra time for that gratification.
So do you think that the bandwidth will... I mean, don't you think the bandwidth will eventually catch up?
I think the ability... I think the pipes may already be there, because there's
mm-hmm.
a lot of dark fiber everywhere
sure.
right now that's not being utilized. I think the problem is the telcos are charging so much for this. I mean, some of the estimates I read were that, like, say YouTube, that their bandwidth costs alone, not the operating cost for their data centers, but that their bandwidth costs are possibly in excess of $600,000 a month.
Right.
You know, and that's with just people downloading those little junky, you know, watch me dance in my bedroom in my underwear videos. You know, these aren't even high def, you know, that kind of thing. So I think maybe those videos are fine for download, but as far as movies, I don't really see a future for high def movies coming to your home until the day everyone has fiber to the curb. Yeah. You know,
I think it is just a matter of, and who knows though, by the time that happens, there could be like, you know, Sony's already calling 1080p the true high def, and there's going to be that next stage of video quality that's going to be better. It'll be, you know, Dolby 500.1 surround sound and, you know, whatever. But I also think there is something to be said where right now the problem is they're not centralized. You know, when it comes to, say, cable companies, they probably put out quite a bit of money every month when they were first rolling out cable and laying down those lines and getting the boxes and, you know, getting people to sign up for the service. And, you know, you see a company, we talk about Google a lot on here, and they've been, you know, there's been all these stories about them secretly buying up all this dark fiber. And it's like they know, you know, you look at that and you look at net neutrality where, you know, AT&T and all these big media companies, or these big telcos are trying to force people who are making all this money to pay more for their bandwidth, and the costs are already high. And it's like Google sees that maybe. I mean, this is just my guessing, but, you know, if they buy up enough dark fiber, they could just become their own telco almost. You know, where if they control enough of the backbone, you know, all they're paying for is getting it just from to the house, and they're not paying for it to go across the entire country.
Right.
So then where are we at if you have one company, so say Google has all this fiber and they finally get YouTube actually with something useful besides like what we've already discussed. You know, they provide movies in high def and they have this backbone. I think they could increase the speed, because I know that movie I was downloading on Live, I wasn't getting my full bandwidth that I've been paying for. You know, I'm told this is how much I get, but I hardly ever see that because they're already overselling the bandwidth.
Right.
So if somebody can deliver that to me, even if it's, you know, through Internet 2 or some other secondary network, it's almost like that's what we need.
Right.
I don't remember if we talked about this last week, but there's a big story, I think it was a week or two ago, about Google's SneakerNet. Did you hear about this?
I didn't.
So Google, again, in their amazing ability to tap into unclaimed markets, they're doing what everybody's calling a next generation sneaker net. There's all this data in academia, I mean terabytes and terabytes of data, that they want to share, but getting that to someone over the internet, even over a higher speed academic network, is just too slow.
Right.
So what Google is doing is they're taking by hand, or sending it via FedEx, depending on the resource, a RAID setup that people then transfer directly onto. Google then stores it in one of their, you know, gigantic server rooms. Then somebody can request that. It is then delivered again. I mean, this is very similar to the Netflix model. Delivered again to this next person for a fee and downloaded instantly via this RAID system.
So wait, let me understand this. Is someone showing up like UPS with a big box?
Yeah. So imagine the Netflix model applied to transferring terabytes and terabytes of data between universities and research institutions.
So I have 10 terabytes of, say, the SETI.
Right, exactly.
Results, and I want to give it to you, but you're in Palo Alto.
Yeah.
So I put this thing, and Google takes it on a truck and brings it to you in a couple of days, and you plug it in and grab it all.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's not exactly related, but it's similar concepts to what we're talking about here, and I think it just shows that demand never keeps up with supply when it comes to bandwidth.
Right.
And that's really the issue we're seeing here is that, you know, a couple of years ago, nobody would think about downloading high-def movies, let alone watching high-def movies.
Right.
And now I'm frustrated that my high-def movie download took so long.
Right. But I think we're conditioned for a certain amount of wait time versus what we're paying and what we expect.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Regular definition movies look pretty good on my television.
Yeah, they do.
You know, and I mean, I think there's like a curve there of diminishing returns that sort of is going to eliminate some of these things. And as far as like the whole Blu-ray versus HD DVD war,
mm-hmm.
I think digital downloads, if someone could get their act together, could kill both of these formats.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, remember when those Blu-rays were fighting with the HD DVDs?
Yeah.
Well, wasn't that silly? We just downloaded it all.
Well, and I don't think it's even going to have to be someone with high def doing it. I think that's what Apple is kind of hedging their bet with the Apple TV, because it's not high def.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the iPod became big and all these other MP3 players, it wasn't because the MP3 was so much better. It doesn't sound as good as a CD, but nobody cares because it's easier to use, it's easier to move around, it's easier to listen to how you want, when you want, where you want.
Right.
And if you can do that with video, which it's not there because it's all locked down. You know, the closest thing is like the Amazon service where I can watch it on 5 different machines and I can download it to each of those machines separately. Whereas iTunes, yeah, I get 5 different machines, but I have to transfer that myself.
Right. I think Apple understands that, and really Microsoft understands this too, because that's why the Xbox Live video service exists.
Yeah.
But it's also why the Apple TV component exists, because both Apple and Microsoft realize that the true future of digital video downloads is for you to watch it on your nice television from your couch, not
right.
from your computer chair.
Exactly.
So they're both trying to give you ways to sit in your living room and consume on-demand digital content. But I don't know how long it's going to take for them to get it right. The Apple downloads look pretty good,
mm-hmm.
you know, but the Apple TV is only really marginally more useful than a video iPod.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that the Apple TV has a little higher quality output than your iPod would, but even then, it's still 640 by 480, which isn't even 480p.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a little bit less. And so I'm curious to see how it's going to all pan out, because I still think that digital downloads are the future, but mm-hmm. I think you're right that right now, HD, it's just not, we're not ready for it. And it's going to take someone having that unified platform. And I don't think anybody has it yet, because so here's the flaws in what I consider the two major players, which would be, to me, Apple and Microsoft are the two major players in this market. The 360 has it right in that I can sit on the couch, browse the movies, watch the previews, and purchase them right there.
But then you wait.
But then I have to wait. And the standard def stuff, it's about 20 minutes, so I can play a game, and then it gives me a message, okay, this is ready to view. It's not too bad. I can deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But grandma's not going to sit in front of my Xbox 360 and try to watch a movie.
Or even know how to turn it on.
Right. Now, the Apple TV, to me, is the other side of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to use. From what I've seen, I haven't actually used it, but what I've seen and what everybody's been saying is that it just works,
mm-hmm.
which is what people want. And the 360 does that, but it's a little more complicated interface. But the problem with Apple TV, and unless I'm completely off here, and correct me if I am, but I don't think you can purchase anything from it. It's just syncing with what you've already paid for on your PC. So it requires you to have another expensive device to function.
I think that's right.
And that, to me, is a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they'll fix that in a firmware update later on, which easily could happen, just mm-hmm. integrate the Apple Store. But that was one thing I was pretty disappointed with, is that they didn't integrate at least a small part of the Apple Store.
Right. I think the cable companies have a chance here, too, because if you have digital cable, and if you do on-demand movies,
right.
they start right away.
Yeah.
And it looks good, because it's standard def.
Yep.
If you have a nice television, then it comes through fine. It used to be a little glitchy, like sometimes you would get artifacting if you were getting it at a high volume time or whatever, but I think there might be a future there, because the cable company already has a fat pipe into your house.
True. That is very true.
You know, if you could use that vector to deliver, then that would probably be better than over just the small part of your cable, like for me, my cable modem is mm-hmm. utilizing. But
And it is something that people are already familiar with. And, you know, I know a lot of people already, I mean, they've been doing that for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, they before it was just pay-per-view where it started at a certain time and you just watched it when it started. And now you can do the fast-forward rewind thing with the cable box. Mm-hmm. For me, I think the missing piece there is that you already have to have a subscription to cable. So it's like, you know, they're this old media where I, you know, I want everything a la carte now.
Right.
Well, I can't have it a la carte through the cable company yet.
And even the standard definition movie selection on pay-per-view is not that
is
good.
Is it pretty limited?
It's pretty limited, yeah. Really.
So I don't have cable, so I'm not an expert on this issue. But I to me, it just doesn't seem like they're... seems like they're falling behind and everybody else is kind of passing them and they had their chance and they missed it.
Right. Well, there is always BitTorrent. But, you know, the problem with BitTorrent is if it's not the latest thing that everyone is demanding,
right,
then it doesn't work for delivery.
Well, that and you have to have, like, 3 degrees and an advanced understanding of routers and switches.
Right. Well, the thing, you know, Juiced, the online service that you put me onto, was actually pretty cool. But, you know, they use a BitTorrent delivery for part of their, you know, video. And really, I think, you know, they're the ones that Viacom just signed a deal with because Viacom, you know, sued Google Video or YouTube and said, you know, we don't want you to show any of our stuff and we're going to give Juiced our licensing deal. So I don't know. BitTorrent definitely has a future, but I'm still not sure that's an effective way to deliver, you know, on-demand video for stuff that is not the latest and greatest, most popular.
Now, the advantage that Juiced does have is that it's very seamless. I mean, you run it and it just starts playing. What they're missing right now is content and, you know, the big missing pieces, linking that to the television. Well, that is the show for this week. I want to thank everybody again for listening in to our friendly little neighborhood podcast. Feel free to go to our website, angryadmins.com. We plug it every week. Please go. Please listen. You can listen there. You can subscribe to our podcast via iTunes from that, or even if you wanted to, via email. And you wouldn't even have to go anywhere to get it. We also have forums on there, which has our show notes and any updates that we have during the week or later on. Go there and check if you want to know if anything's been updated about any stories we've covered here. Thanks again for listening. And again, my name is Joe Bibby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
Stay angry.